And do you know how many people would probably, like, run away at the sight of dismembered legs?
Yeah. Dude, there's a 4-foot bong and a bag of wheat by your bed.
Hey, everybody, this is Chris. So today's episode is going to be just a little bit different, mainly because we screwed up. So from time to time, Mark and I are not able to record in the same room, so we have to do some remote stuff. And in this episode, we discovered during, afterwards, when we were doing some post-production, that the last 20 to 30-so minutes of Mark's recording just didn't happen. It pretty much just cuts off. And so I am talking to no one for a while. So in today's episode, we're going to piece together what we can. I'll record the last bit of it solo, so all the information about breast cancer gets on there. And if you're okay with that, press on. Thanks for listening.
Which would make sense if you're driving while on left.
It's in my pod! It's in my pod!
I'm very easily startled, Mr. Pinkerton.
Tiddlywinks, the parlor game for nerds, is nearing extinction.
I don't know which regulation body would regulate the penis ring that you were talking about earlier.
I'm ready to remain conscious as we record this show.
Did I ever tell you that the most I've ever been cussed out by a patient was an Alzheimer's patient?
Ooh.
Yeah, we picked up the lady from a memory care unit, and we're taking her over to a hospital on the far east side of the Tri-County area.
Okay.
Because that was her hospital request. Well, on her paperwork. We had to board and collar her. This was back in the day when falls got boarded and collared.
Oh, wow.
You know, that was, there was really no determination that we could make on scene. You know, we couldn't clear C-spine.
You know, I realized to the uninitiated, board and collared sounds like something you'd do to be mean, like tarred and feathered.
Good point. Yeah.
It sure does. And it kind of is.
So this is a long spine board. Everybody's seen them on TV. The collar around the neck, stuff like that. She cussed a blue streak at me from King City all the way out east of this hospital. She did not stop. I learned some new words. For being a sweet little grandmotherly looking lady, that lady had a mouth on her, I got to tell you.
Well, remember, they're closer to the generation that invented those swear words.
Right. That's a good point. That is a very good point.
I have them every now and again.
So, welcome to Medical Stuff. My name is Mark. I'm more of an ass man, Frankum. And that is Chris. I like boobies, Finkston over there.
I think I literally, that was in our last episode or something, I just said boobs. Yeah. No. It was about, we were talking about, oh God, what were we talking about? Well, screw it. Just go listen to all our episodes and try to find the one where I talk about boobs.
Track down Chris's random comments for us, please.
Yeah.
And then if you could email us where it is so we can pull it out for future reference, you know.
Be great.
So, yeah, this is Medical Stuff. Today we're talking about breast cancer.
Yeah, we are. And how timely, considering October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Right. Have you seen some of the slogans that they use for breast cancer awareness?
Oh, like save the boobies or save the tatas?
Save the tatas, save second base. I like that one a lot.
That's pretty funny.
I saw a t-shirt that said, yes, they're fake. My real ones tried to kill me.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So breast cancer awareness, October. What you got for me, Chris? Lay it on me, baby.
Well, October is the 10th month of the year. It's also the month, which is the month that I was born in. So happy birthday to me.
Is your birthday this month?
It is, actually tomorrow.
Really? I feel like a dick. I mean, happy birthday. That's what I mean.
But no, we're going to talk about breast cancer today. Breast cancer is particularly timely because this is indeed Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So to start off talking about breast cancer, what was that? Ba-doop.
More damn it, Chris, what is that?
That's what that is.
As a more important question, and the fun part about, so that was Chris's phone going off when she forgets to turn down every single episode. And the fun part is I called him literally 5 minutes before we started recording and his phone rang at that point.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I didn't notice. But yeah, to talk about breast cancer, first we got to talk about cancer itself a little bit. So cancer is a disease where abnormal cells divide uncontrollably. So all cells divide. That's how you're formed in the womb. You start out as one cell and that cell splits in two and then those cells split in two and so on and so on.
Well, also, as you go through life, your cells need to reproduce because cells die off and they regenerate.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. However, a normal healthy cell in your body, it'll stop dividing over time or its division will slow. What this is in each cell you have DNA, and at the end of the DNA chains are little things called telomeres. And telomeres are required to allow a cell to divide. Well, every time a cell divides, the telomeres get smaller and smaller and smaller till it stops dividing. In cancerous cells, that process is interrupted, and they'll continue to multiply, and these will form tumors. So you get enough cancerous cells together, they start multiplying, and they form a tumor. What a tumor is just a bunch of cancerous cells all in one spot. This will cause a disruption in normal physiological processes throughout the body. Now, here's the thing, though. Cancer cells, they're not like scar tissue, because scar tissue does one thing, and that is be a scar. It's no longer functional. So if you were to have a gland or something that formed scar tissue, you would no longer have a function there. Cancer cells may continue to function. Sometimes they can have a hyper amount of functionality. Sometimes they'll have no or low functionality, or sometimes they'll continue to do whatever job they were. So if you had like pancreatic cancer, for example, you may have a pancreas that produces too much insulin because of the cancer, or maybe it won't produce enough, or maybe it produces none because it's an advanced cancer. So fun facts about cancer. So breast cancer is obviously when we have these uncontrollably dividing cells in breast tissue. It's diagnosed in roughly 200,000 people each year, making it the third most common cancer in the United States, just barely behind lung cancer. And in terms of cancer deaths, it is the second killer of women in the United States, cancer killer of women in the United States, which is just barely behind lung cancer there as well. So it can occur in men. However, it's about only 1% of all diagnosed cases are in men. Men do have a small amount of breast tissue. It's similar to women before puberty. In women, it will develop at puberty, and in men, it just simply doesn't. Men do have actually a higher mortality rate, though, when we get breast cancer. But this is likely due to typically being diagnosed at a later stage because the earlier symptoms aren't as obvious due to a lack in breast tissue. And so, it was thought at one point that breast cancer was more aggressive in men. However, that's no longer believed. It's mostly just due to the fact that we don't catch it till much later.
Right. Well, you know, women very early on are encouraged to go get mammograms. And obviously, those aren't going to work for most men. You know, so just the awareness amongst the female population is much higher just because they do have such a higher occurrence rate on it.
Right. And actually, and a lot of that, it's kind of hard to talk about breast cancer without mentioning the Susan G. Komen Foundation. They're one of the leading organizations that has assisted breast cancer research. And more importantly, they have assisted women around the world in getting screenings and those kind of things. And we'll talk about it a little bit later. But since 1989 to about 2015, because of efforts like these, breast cancer has been plummeting and its mortality rate has been plummeting. And that's all good news. But anyway, who's it?
So risk factors.
Yeah.
The age of the patient. The majority of breast cancer patients are over the age of 60, with only 10 to 15% being under the age of 45. So obviously age has something to do with this. Obviously, we just talked about that it is much more prevalent in females, plus it is detected much earlier in females. So. Right. I mean, not trying to be weird, I may be weird, you know, guys, give yourself a self exam every once in a while.
Yeah, and trying to be weird, it just comes naturally.
Exactly. It's a gift. Ask anybody. Oh, my partner this month wants to know if you'll have a Facebook group for the support group or for people who know me.
Oh, so, yeah. No.
Yeah, he's interested in joining the Facebook group if you have one.
So. Yeah, well, your daughter runs it, so.
Exactly. but, you know, I mean, if you're in the shower or something like that and you notice something a little bit odd, a lump or anything like that, what are you laughing at?
I'm just going to say it. Let's face it, guys. Feeling ourselves in the shower is nothing we're not used to already. You might as well feel your breast, too.
Okay, good add-on on the end there, yes. Feel your breast also. But no, if you're giving yourself a shower and if you do find a lump, go get it checked out early. Because if you don't, the chance of it developing into much worse situation is definitely the way to go. Or is definitely not the way to go. Go seek medical attention.
Yeah.
Family history, mothers and sisters that have had breast cancer, this doubles your risk for breast cancer yourself.
And this is actually, and just to be clear, a mother or sister that has had breast cancer is a risk factor for men as well.
Right. So then you have genetic factors. You have the BRCA1 and the BRCA2 are gene mutations. Women with a specific gene mutation are far more likely to get breast cancer. And isn't this what... Angelina Jolie?
Yeah.
She had that?
Yeah, she was BRCA1 positive. And this increases your risk substantially. And it's estimated that it increases the risk of getting breast cancer anywhere from 60 to a whopping 90%. It also increases the risk of ovarian cancer up to 40 to 60%. So Angelina Jolie actually lost her mother to ovarian cancer. And Angelina Jolie also had the BRCA1 mutation. With that and other factors considered, her doctor gave her a number of an 87% chance of developing breast cancer. And so she opted to have a preventative double mastectomy. A mastectomy is where they remove the breast.
I understand that completely. You know, when it first happened, I think a lot of people were like, okay, that's just weird. But when you get numbers like that from your doctor...
Oh, yeah.
It's completely understandable, especially if the prevention of this is having the double mastectomy.
Well, and her, you know, there's also, there's a lot of mastoplasty, which is where they rebuild or reconstruct the breast to kind of get around those things. And it's one of the other things, too, is that her doctor ended up releasing, made a statement as well about Angelina Jolie, and I'm assuming it's with Angelina Jolie's permission that... You know, that she was really happy that Angelina Jolie wrote an op-ed for the New York Times. It's called My Medical Choice, and it was about why she made her decision. And her doctor said that, no, this was a very wise decision, and Angelina Jolie is a very private person and really did not want to talk about this with anybody. And the main reason she did it was to... help other people make that choice when necessary. Because I think...
Well, I think probably one reason is 60 to 90% increase, you know?
Yeah.
With those kind of numbers, she's using her ability to reach out to people in a very excellent manner.
Well, and she had... I mean, if you think about it, she only had a 13% chance of not getting the second most dangerous cancer to women.
But now, after the double mastectomy, it's 5%.
Yeah, which is actually less than the average woman. 5% of getting breast cancer, which is actually less than the average woman in the United States.
Right.
So she is now at a below average risk for breast cancer because she made that choice. And I believe she actually has also made the choice to get her ovaries removed as well.
Right. You know, and I mean, this is a great conversation for her to start.
Absolutely.
It needs to be addressed. And with those kind of numbers, it absolutely needs to be addressed.
No, I think that was pretty awesome for her to make that, to do that op-ed, because there's got to be a lot of people that have, that face that decision and to have and see others out there that have been in that situation and made the decision and getting their perspective on it, I think is going to go a long way in helping people take preventative measures.
Well, also, I mean, think about it. She, like you said, she's a very private person. I don't know if many people know this, but people on the internet are mean.
What?
Yeah, I know. There could be some very cruel, judgmental people out there.
Yeah, that's you know. Have you podcasters ever come, that think they're funny.
Right. But no, it's by doing this, I'm sure she got a lot of very negative, very uninformed reactions.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I don't doubt that.
I said that, you know, I've said that, oh, crap, that just fell out my writer.
Oh, well, see, so,
Well, no, I mean, it's just, well, okay, my initial reaction was like, oh, good Lord, crazy Hollywood person, you know. But then when you actually look into it and get your facts and find out the reasonings behind it, solidly made decision, Hollywood person.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So, other risk factors can be obesity. Is controversial because weight gain is common in the most impacted age group. So,
it's going to be your post-menopause group.
Right.
And post-menopause is notorious for assisting with weight gain, if you want to call it assisting. And so, it's difficult to tell, is weight gain a risk factor? Or is it just that
it's the most... Is correlation equal causation?
Right, absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely.
I'm actually blaming my obesity on postmenopause.
Are you postmenopausal?
I'm postmenopausal, and yeah, that's something I'm struggling with because of that. So
I feel like there's a talk you and I should have.
Or at least a book I should read, so.
Yeah. I've got one with pictures.
I've got a pop-up book you need to look at, Mr. Franco. I bought it for my children.
I have a, I have an anatomy and physiology pop-up book. I do.
Oh, good Lord. side note, I was showing pictures of from my Facebook page of what Fing and I do at work.
Oh, God. Fing is my nickname, by the way.
Right. I brought up the picture. Do you remember that time we went to that nursing home? And the staff were having an absolute conniption fit because we went into the room without gowns and masks because the patient had MRSA.
Yeah.
And you ended up with a full gown.
Yeah.
Gloves, safety goggles, face mask, and another glove like a rooster tail on top of your head.
Yeah. Yeah. We actually managed to fit a large glove. I might have been an XL. I have a substantial head.
Yeah. You have a huge head. So.
Have you ever seen my dad's noggin?
Yeah.
That thing is gigantic.
It's genetic. It's genetic, definitely.
Yeah.
So not having children or having children over the age of 35 it also seems to be a factor for increasing your risk for breast cancer. And breastfeeding may reduce the chance of breast cancer. You know, so on top of any other benefits that the child gets from breastfeeding, it also can reduce your risks. But I don't think there's a direct line between those two yet. And then birth control pills lead to a slight increase in the risk of breast cancer. Birth control pills, although they do a great thing in helping people control their lives, they do have quite a few side effects.
Yeah. Like any other medication.
Right.
There's pluses and minuses. That's why you should see a doctor.
It's almost like we have a theme of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So... Okay, so diagnosis or diagnoses.
Ooh. So diagnosis, so getting diagnosed with breast cancer. So first of all, in addition to those risk factors, there are some early warning signs. And we'll kind of talk about the self-exam here in a little bit. But the early warning signs are a lump or lumps in the breast tissue. They might be painful, but they're not always painful. The lump is caused when the out-of-control cells divide enough to form a mass called a tumor. We talked about that earlier. Discharge from either nipple, other than milk, could be clear or yellow or could even be blood. And then a less common but incredibly aggressive form of breast cancer is called inflammatory breast cancer, or IBC, and can have very different symptoms. And patients may never notice a lump.
Now, there's also IBS, which will also have very different symptoms.
Yeah, and is also not cancer.
Right.
And checking your breast will not help you determine if you have irritable. Well, it'll help you determine if you have IBC.
Right.
It'll help you determine if you have irritable bowel syndrome.
That's right. Yeah. But it may distract you from it.
That's very true. distract you from a lot of things.
Right.
For example, scratch and sniff. If you're trying, never mind.
Oh, yeah, that's.
Anyway, also you need to look for, because of IBC, inflammatory breast cancer, that can cause swelling and or pain of one or both breasts, even with no distinct lump noted. Cancer cells can block lymph nodes, leading to an excess of lymph fluid, which is what causes that swelling. It can also occur near the clavicle or near the armpits. That's one of the things to also watch out for, is if you notice lumps also up closer to your clavicle or near your armpit, that can also be a sign of breast cancer. And the reason being,
your clavicle is your collarbone, runs across the front of your upper part of your chest. 7 pounds of pressure is all it takes from a direct hit to break your clavicle.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh.
Huh.
Does nothing for this episode, but I feel smarter for saying it.
No, you know what? And I feel like you're smarter for saying it. I feel like if this was like a TV, we'd flash the More You Know star across the screen.
Right.
Anyway, so you have lymph nodes that lead into the breast tissue, and they have ducts that come back out and it transports lymph fluid back to the lymph nodes. Cancer, one of the ways that it will spread or metastasize from your breast on out is through this system. So sometimes, often, people won't notice a lump or any sort of pain in the breast, but they will notice that there is a lump under an armpit, or they have pain or swelling under their armpits, or near their collarbone. And the reason being is because that is where lymph nodes that come from the breast are. There are lymph nodes in the breast itself, and then there's ones that are kind of downstream from there. And those end up becoming inflamed. So outside of that, swelling may also occur. Yeah, I got to talk about that. The skin of the breast may also have like an orange peel appearance due to it. This is due to if there's damage in the lymph system of the breast, it'll cause lymph fluid to move out of the lymph system and into the subcutaneous tissues, which means just below the skin. And it causes like an orange peel effect, and it can be kind of hardened and feel thicker there. And the breast also may become discolored as well.
Wow, that's quite the mental image, the orange peel appearance.
Yeah, but I was actually, when I was researching that, I found that on several different sources, and I'm like, that is a very specific but notable sign.
So many years ago, I lived in Oklahoma.
Chris, Oklahoma.
You need to stop that.
I
don't think that sounds as good outside your head that it does inside your head.
I think it sounds fine.
So anyway, they had a store in town, and it was called the Breast Stop. Well, they had this really funny commercial, and it was somebody singing, "If they're hanging in, you know it, come to us. If they're hanging in, you know it, come to us." And as they're singing this, they are showing like 2 oranges, 2 cantaloupes, 2 bananas, 2 watermelons, 2 grapes. And they specialized in breast sizes of all size. So my ex-wife was pregnant. Was large to begin with. And when she became pregnant, she became very large. It is middle of August in Oklahoma. She's uncomfortable because all her bras are not fitting her. I will run down to the store and get you a couple of nursing bras that are bigger size. She did not feel like going because it was 108 degrees outside.
Yeah.
You know, she was not really all that hip to going out in the heat, being very pregnant and uncomfortable to begin with. Not a problem. So I go down there. I walk in. "Hey, I need 2 of this size bra." Maternity bras. Lady goes, "Just a minute," and disappears into the back. I think maybe they're in the back, right? So she's gone for like 10 minutes. As she's gone, I'm looking around. I'm like, "Oh, maternity bras." I go over. I find a couple of the correct size. Great. I go back over. A different lady comes out from the back. She goes, May I ask who these are for?" I'm like, "Well, the maternity bras are for my wife. She's very uncomfortable." "Oh, okay. Not a problem." Starts ringing me up. I'm like, "Why?"
Yeah, it's like a...
"Well, we only do men's sizings after hours."
Oh.
Huh. Now I'm living in Tulsa, Oklahoma in the 90s. You know, not exactly, you know, a little more conservative down there.
Right.
I go, do you get a lot of these? She's like, you would be surprised. Okay, fair enough.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So now, if the representation of your breasts are two oranges, that's okay. If your breasts have an orange peel appearance, go see a doctor. So self-examinations. Self-examinations are very important. And this next sentence is apparently very important because Chris made it bold.
I did.
You did. But does not replace an exam performed by your physician.
Yeah. Well,
did that have the correct amount of?
It was perfect.
Okay, great.
It was perfect.
So if you have symptoms that you believe are related to breast cancer, go see your doctor.
And I do want to elaborate on that message a little bit. There was a little bit of controversy at one time about whether or not people doing self-exams was doing more harm than good. Ultimately, it was determined it was doing a lot more good. But the reason that controversy came up is because there was a misconception that if you think you have symptoms and you do a self-exam and you don't find anything, well, then don't worry about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's not the case. So you'd have, you know, women that had, you know, the discharges or there's swelling or they have, you know, like maybe there's a lump somewhere else doing the self breast examination and figuring everything was okay. And so there was some anecdotal evidence that that was leading to a later diagnosis of breast cancer. And while ultimately it turned out to not be true and that public education surrounding the self-examination decreased the mortality rate of breast cancer and indeed did help with early findings, it's still important to note that this doesn't replace an exam by your physician.
Well, I think that the important thing is that although self-examinations are extremely important, they don't replace mammograms. They don't replace a physician's, your regular physician checkup.
Right, exactly. I mean, even mammograms and MRIs and your physician can miss things.
Oh, yeah.
Let alone you just feeling your own breast. So,
well, and if you find something that's concerning to you and you go see your physician and you're uncomfortable with his diagnosis of nothing or something, you always have the right to get a second opinion.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so if you go get checked out and your primary care physician says, oh, I don't think it's anything, and you want to be more in depth with that, you should have a physician that's okay with you challenging him on that. And if you want to get a second opinion, go get a second opinion because it is your health and your life.
And most of the physicians I know will not be personally offended by you getting a second opinion. It is a normal part of being a physician. In fact, physicians often consult with other physicians to be like, am I missing something here?
Right.
So, yeah, they should never be offended. In fact, they may even recommend you to somebody.
And if they are severely offended?
Get a new doctor.
Like a new doctor. I always say the doctor I have, I like a lot because he understands three words. I don't know. If he doesn't know something, he will send you to a specialist or he will research it himself. Because no doctor knows everything.
Right, absolutely. Only paramedics know everything.
Exactly. We are gods. So,
there's God among mortals.
So, self-examination. So, steps. I like how you have the letter A in parentheses and followed by the number 1 in parentheses.
Well, and then I stopped doing that because I didn't want to dick with the formatting, so just fuck it.
So begin by looking in the mirror, arms down by your sides.
Look, shirt off, by the way.
Well, everything off, naked from the waist up.
Yep.
Like bra and everything.
Yeah.
Look to see that your breasts are their usual shape, size, and color. If you have a discolored area, and I'm not even referring to the orange peel appearance. I'm just saying an area that's exceptionally red or looks like it should be tender, even if it isn't, that should be concerning. Each breast should be similar in shape, although it's not uncommon for them to be different sizes. And also, I mean, there are going to be some women out there whose breasts aren't necessarily shaped the same. As long as they're shaped as they normally are, you know, they're not abnormally shaped for you. And also look at the skin for that orange peel appearance, or if one or both nipple becomes inverted. This is called a nipple retraction.
Yeah, and it becomes inverted because there'll be a swelling. It actually isn't really the nipple itself turning in. It's more like surrounding tissue going over,
right?
I guess is a better way to put it.
So is a way to fix that to plug your nose and hold your breath and bear down real hard till you hear a...
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
That's, yeah. Yeah, and then don't worry about seeing a doctor because you fixed the problem.
Right. I like how we go from paramedics to know everything to that statement right there. No, if you do have a suddenly inverted nipple, that is something that definitely needs to get checked out. So next, you're going to raise your arms above your head, continue looking for changes mentioned above, and look for any discharge that isn't milk. And I'm assuming if you haven't been recently pregnant, even if it's a milky substance, you want to get that checked out.
Right.
You know, if you're discharging something that looks like milk, you should have a small child in the house or in your life, you know. So, okay, so you're laying on your back. You have your right arm up, using your left hand to give make small quarter-sized circles and go across the entire breast. Use of this technique ensures that you cover the entire breast. If you start at the nipple, checking a circular pattern, making a bigger and bigger circles as you go out. You can also do it in a top to bottom, side to side. Really, how you do it is not as important as that you do it and you cover the entire breast.
Yeah, that's the main goal. Because a lot of people here, you know, they think they have to do in a spiral pattern outward or the circles that get bigger and bigger. And those are methods of doing it, but you just have to do it in a way that makes sure you cover the entire area.
Right. Different strokes for different folks. You know, I mean, if it makes more sense doing it in a grid-like pattern, have at it, just as long as you're doing it. And then once you're done doing that while you're laying down, repeat the last step while you're standing up. So
that's the self-exam. And like we mentioned earlier, it's very important that you frequently do self-exams, not just when you have symptoms, but it should just be done frequently in general.
So if you're going to see a healthcare professional, they're going to recommend, I believe it's once a year.
Yeah, I think that's right.
To get a mammogram. I remember in college, we were watching a video in your class and they're showing a lady get a mammogram. I don't know if you've ever seen a mammogram, Chris. Have you ever seen a woman get one?
I have.
We're sitting in class, we're showing this video. I lean over to the guy sitting next to me and go, why are her eyes watering? It looks like an incredibly uncomfortable position.
Yeah. And again, this is something that, breast size will have a lot to do with the level of discomfort you have, or depending on one of the things they recommend is trying to go like the week before your period when your breast may be more swollen.
Because
what they literally do is
smash.
Yeah, they smash. They just put them on this thing that's just called a platter. And there's
Have you ever seen them tenderize a piece of chicken?
Yes. It's
one step short of that, where they just take it, they flatten it out as much as possible.
It's the same technology they use to check on your broken bones, to look for cavities in your teeth. However, x-rays have to penetrate, and it's easier to penetrate tissue to look at what's going on if the tissue is flatter.
Right. My question is, why hasn't anybody invented like a system where they have like two little boob-sized CT scanners? You can just place the boobs in, scanner goes around,
so does a CT of the breast. Actually, I do believe there is something now called a 3D mammogram. Yeah, that's something like that. Again, it wouldn't be a CT. It would still be X-rays, but it's called a breast tomosynthesis. It's a relatively new breast imaging procedure. It was approved by the FDA in 2011. Like traditional mammography, 3D mammography does use X-ray to produce images of the breast tissue in order to detect lumps, tumors, or abnormalities. However, they are able to leave the breast and they don't have to smush it.
In its natural state.
Yeah, they don't have to smush it. And this is helpful. It's helpful because it helps pinpoint lumps and areas a little bit better than flattening the breast. Because when you flatten the breast, you're distorting it. However, when procedures are done, they're not doing a procedure on a flattened breast. They're doing it on a breast in its natural state. So these 3D mammograms can greatly help pinpoint stuff.
So you said it was approved in 2011. I wonder how common this is now. And if it's not that common, I wonder why.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would say money. Just buying a new breast cancer machine.
Well, there's that, and then I'm kind of just reading about it here. It looks like it also basically takes a, almost kind of like how a CAT scan will take pictures in layers. This will do the same thing, but with a penetrating X-ray, and it results in many, many, many more images versus a mammogram. Typically, like a screening mammogram is typically 2 to 3 images of each breast.
So they're worried about the level of exposure to the X-ray radiation.
Well, I mean, there's that, but then there's also just the fact that it's got to produce so many more images, it's probably expensive.
Yeah, but this day of digital,
that's
not that. I mean, it's just...
Some guy out there changing a big film reel. Get me the 80-millimeter roll.
Exactly, you know. So, but anyway, traditional mammogram takes about 20 minutes during the procedure. They're flattened, as we said, and it's important to have mammograms done at the same facility, because that's going to be the easiest way to compare previous versus new. Because if there is a benign abnormality found, and you go to a different facility and they see the same abnormality, they're going to want to recheck it to make sure it's benign.
Yeah, a benign, by the way, in case you're not familiar with the cancer terminology, you have benign and malignant. Benign is basically harmless. Or at least it's not cancerous. It's not going to spread. Malignant is the bad one. That's the one that'll spread and is cancerous.
Benign is also what you'll be on your next birthday when you're 8.
Oh, look at that. That's if I wasn't so tired, I'd laugh for that. I actually do find that pretty funny. I'm coming off a night shift, by the way, for anyone listening.
Yes, Chris worked all night and he works tonight. So
yeah,
if you hear snoring, I'll just thump on the mic a couple times to wake you up. Exactly.
Yeah.
Ultrasound can also be used to help healthcare providers gather more information on the mammogram findings. I think that this is a set. If they find something on your mammogram, this may be the next step they go to.
Yeah, that's its most common use. It's typically used to kind of like so mammograms are really good at locating things that shouldn't be there. Ultrasounds are really good at seeing if something is filled with fluid or not. And a lot of times you can get cysts that form in breast tissue that are not cancerous, that the ultrasound can differentiate. So basically the way that's done is it's performed. It's just like any other ultrasound. If you've ever had an ultrasound, either during pregnancy or on a muscle or, you know, for like blood clots, that kind of stuff, it's performed pretty much the same way. Technician has a handpiece. There's gel on the end of the handpiece that's freaking cold. And then the handpiece is... right. And they press that into the breast tissue. And then there's a live image on a screen. Technician watches the screen for any changes, and they just basically take screenshots. And sadly, this is where we lose Mark's bit of the recording. So the rest of tonight's episode, or today's episode, depending on when you're listening, will be just me. Now, bear in mind, that won't stop me from blaming things on Mark. In fact, that actually might lead me to do it a little bit more. He's not here to defend himself. Okay, so I left off on ultrasounds. And so the next imaging piece of technology that we're going to talk about is the breast MRI. MRIs are most useful when breast cancer has already been detected and a physician is trying to determine the size or growth of the masses found on a mammogram. They're not typically used by themselves or in a screening procedure because they commonly produce false positives over the mammogram. However, in patients with high risk factors, you know, take Angelina Jolie, like we talked about earlier, physicians may use MRIs in addition to mammograms as a screening procedure. These are people who are going to be getting screened for breast cancer far more often than your average person from the population. Another technique is a biopsy. So biopsy is where a sample of suspicious tissue is examined. So this is the only way to know for sure if a suspicious sample of tissue is cancerous. And there are several ways that they will do a biopsy. So the first is something called fine needle aspiration, or FNA. This is where a very small gauge needle, like a 25 to 27 gauge, for people out there who are knowledgeable about guns, the higher the gauge number, like shotgun shells, the higher the gauge number, the smaller
It actually is. So an 18 or 16 gauge needle is very large. These are tiny. These are actually smaller than what we'd call a butterfly needle, which is a small needle that's used to just draw blood that you might get at a clinic. These are even smaller than that. But anyway, this small needle is used to aspirate a small amount of tissue within the breast. There's also something called a core needle. This is a much larger needle. It's large, it's hollow, it's kind of wide. And it's inserted into the suspicious tissue, creating a small cylinder of the tissue within the needle. The cylinder is then removed and examined. They'll actually do multiple samples of these. They'll usually do three or four in a line over the suspected area. There's also a surgical biopsy. So in some rare cases, as much of the tissue as possible is needed for examination. So in this case, a physician may surgically remove the entirety of a lump or other suspicious tissue for biopsy. And there's lymph node biopsies as well. So earlier we talked about how cancer can spread. Actually, I'm not sure if we talked about it earlier or not, but cancer can spread. In fact, that's the danger of cancer, is that it does spread. And so what they will actually do is biopsy nearby lymph nodes, because these are actually the passages away from the breast. And if they biopsy a lymph node and find that the cancer has spread to the lymph nodes, there'll be a greater concern that the cancer has spread to the rest of the body. So they may take a lymph node from under the armpit or closer to the collarbone, as we talked about earlier. Those are some diagnostic techniques, but let's talk a little bit, before we move on to treatments, let's talk a little bit about mortality. Let's talk a little bit about breast cancer itself and basically how breast cancer can lead to death, unfortunately. Breast cancer by itself does not kill a person. It's metastasized breast cancer that does. So getting a tumor or a growth in your breast tissue alone is not fatal. However, if the cancerous cells spread to bones, where blood cells are produced, the lungs or other vital organ systems, brain, heart, you name it, it can kill the patient. And that's how it kills the patient. So it is estimated that 40,000 women will die from breast cancer in 2018. But note, this also includes women who are not yet, who are not diagnosed. In other words, breast cancer evidence is found post-mortem. And so they're not counting it as a diagnosis of breast cancer if you die and then via like an autopsy, evidence that breast cancer or cancer that spread from the breast is found. So once breast cancer is detected, there's an overall 90% 5-year survival rate and an 83% 10-year survival rate. And I want to talk a little bit about why this is measured in 5-year and 10-year survival rates. The main reason being is, as we mentioned earlier, much of our population that has breast cancer is older. And cancer is not, it's not like you go in one day and you're cured. What ends up happening is you go in one day and there's no sign of the cancer. We don't truly know if it's gone, but we can say that there's no sign of it. And when there's no sign of cancer, they call that remission. And if the cancer never comes back, then you can consider it cured. But the problem is you really don't know if the cancer never comes back until you die from another reason, because we're all going to die. So that is why we don't really talk about, whether or not, how many people die. Or how many people that have breast cancer are going to die. We talk about how long do they typically live. So if the cancer is detected in the breast only, then the 5-year rate skyrockets to about 99%. And the good news is thanks to the efforts of many organizations out there, Susan G. Komen included, this early stage of detection accounts for 62% of all diagnoses. So almost 2/3 of all women with breast cancer are being caught in the earliest of phases. If the cancer rate is detected in a non-adjacent body part, in other words, an area that's not next to the breast. So like if you have breast cancer or if you have cancer in the nearby lymph nodes around the breast, that's an adjacent body part. A non-adjacent body part would be bones or lungs. I mean, yes, lungs are close to the breast, but, it's not like as the flow cries. it's not like as the crow flies. They actually have as a different path. And so if they start finding it in places that are not near the breast, then that's considered non-adjacent body part. If that's the case, then the 5-year rate drops dramatically. The 5-year survival rate then becomes 27% as the cancer has been considered metastasized. This is also known as stage 4 cancer, and unfortunately, this stage is always fatal. Though new treatments have helped extend life once cancer has metastasized, and this goes for a lot of cancers, even outside of breast cancers, once this has happened, the survival, the cancer is unfortunately, in all likelihood, aside from lottery style odds, cancer is going to be the death of the patient. From 1989 to 2015, incidence of breast cancer have remained largely the same. However, the mortality rate has dropped substantially. It's dropped over 39% since the 90s. So, good news. This is huge. That's a huge dip. And much of this reduction is credited to more aggressive chemotherapy treatments. And this also brings me to my next point. It's a pet peeve. It's a pet peeve I have about memes that I see on social media. And one of the memes, and here's the thing, I get it. Big pharma, there's big pharma pharmaceutical companies out there like Turing Pharmaceuticals, which is what Martin Shkreli was in charge of. He's now doing jail time, but he was the guy who arbitrarily hiked critical medications just to turn a profit. There's the whole EpiPen scandal. I get it. I absolutely get it. But we got to understand that when you talk about big pharma or pharmaceutical companies, that's tantamount to walking out and saying paramedics suck because you have an experience, because you have one or two. Well, you have plenty of experiences out there where paramedics maybe did a less than good job. Or, you know, and same thing about any group of people. And so what we tend to do is we tend to see these bad examples and we apply that to the entirety of the pharmaceutical industry. And we do so in one such meme that I see way too often, where it's usually a mother and a daughter. And the daughter is saying, you know, mommy, why isn't there a cure for cancer? And the mother is saying some ridiculous line like, because it's more profitable to treat a sick person than to cure a sick person, because we get more money out of them if they're sicker longer. Something along those lines. And here's my response to that. We do cure cancer. We do cure cancer. That statement is so devoid of any sort of logic, because if you look at it, if you actually look at cancer, we are curing cancer left and right. We are reducing mortality rates and extending lives far beyond what they were. And we have people going into remission at a greater rate than ever before, and it continues. And so if that was true, then the pharmaceutical companies would be, you know, dropping their own profits willingly, which they are, because they're trying to save lives. So there's really no basis behind a meme like that. And the reason that meme bothers me so is because it is a baseline level hook that kind of drives people away from taking or participating in good sound treatments, because it falsely establishes a doubt in pharmaceutical companies. Am I saying that pharmaceutical companies should not be under scrutiny? No, they absolutely should. They should be under more scrutiny than just about any other profession out there, because they deal with our lives. But what I am saying is that unfair scrutiny isn't healthy for us, the people. And that such meme is one such example of unfair and baseless scrutiny. Moving on. Sorry, I had to get that out there. It drives me nuts every time I see it. Anyway, moving on. So let's talk about treatments. So surgery, most often used to treat non-metastasized breast cancer, but it is sometimes used in metastasized breast cancer as well. And where surgery is going to be used in metastasized breast cancer is where they are going to be removing tumors and growth and, you know, suspected cancerous tissue from other parts of the body to help improve quality of life. Although, as I mentioned earlier, once we're at stage four, the chances of going into remission and the cancer not coming back dwindles down to almost negligible. So, however, if we're talking about just treating breast cancer that hasn't metastasized, the number one treatment is going to be a mastectomy. So this is a procedure where the entire breast containing the cancerous tissue is removed. And the reason you want to remove the entire breast in a lot of cases is because leaving breast tissue behind was originally thought, well, and it does, leaving breast tissue behind does increase your chances for breast cancer. However, they do have breast-conserving surgery where it's just the cancerous tissue from the breast is removed. It's also called a partial or segmental mastectomy. And what they have found through a lot of clinical studies When combined with radiation therapy after the surgery, this has actually been shown to be just as effective as the full mastectomy. So yeah, there's a little bit different treatment path, and you still may have radiation therapy with a full mastectomy as well. But if you're having breast cancer, breast conserving surgery for your breast cancer, usually radiation therapy or chemo is done afterwards, or sometimes both. So radiation, let's talk about radiation therapy. This is where beams of intense radiation are focused on the cancerous area. So the radiation disrupts the cancer cells and inhibits their ability to grow. So over time, the cells die or their spread will slow. So like we talked about earlier, that's what cancer is. Cancer is cells that just don't know when to stop. They just keep growing and keep growing and keep growing. And the radiation inhibits their ability to do that. So while radiation typically isn't painful while it's being performed, it can become very painful later. In fact, this going through radiation therapy and also chemo, we'll talk about chemo in a little bit, is that experience is what actually drives a lot of people to discontinue treatment, especially if their chances for going into remission are low. The experience of chemo and radiation can be so severe that people would rather just, you know what, I've got a handful of good years left. I don't want to spend them, you know, being irradiated just to eke out another 5 years in my life. Because what can happen, one of the more common complaints especially is getting radiation therapy on like your throat. If you have throat cancer, this will cause just an intense amount of pain because you use your throat all the time. And radiation, while it is absolutely going to be, it's going to, you know, cause the cancer cells to die off, it can also cause healthy cells to die off. You also have to remember that the cancer cells are still your cells. They're still your tissue, and damaging them is painful and can be painful, just as damaging healthy cells are. So chemotherapy. Chemo is when medications are used that target and inhibit or destroy cancerous cells. Often administration after surgery to prevent recurrence of regrowth of any cancerous cells left behind. Can also be administered prior to surgery to try and shrink a tumor prior to that surgery, especially when we're talking about instances where we're talking about like breast conserving surgery. This can also, if there's a tumor that is near a blood vessel or some other critical point, this can help shrink the tumor to make the surgery itself a lot less dangerous. There's actually a multitude of medications for breast cancer, for chemo. Most of them are intravenous. I believe there are some oral medications. I'm going to look that up really quick. So let's see. There's adriamycin and Elance. Those are IV. Taxol IV. There's literally one. It's five. His actual name is 5-fluorouracil. I think I'm butchering that, but it's abbreviated as 5-FU. So FU cancer five times over. And then there's, Cytoxan is IV, periplatin is IV. And so oftentimes physicians will combine these drugs. There are a lot of other drugs. We're not going to go ahead and cover every single one of them. It'd just be a list of names, but you can certainly go to the American Cancer Society and check out their website on breast cancer there. So that is all I have for the episode today. This brings us kind of right up to our normal amount of time. Again, sorry for the screw up back there. I know listening to just me is not near as entertaining as listening to the duo. That is Mark and I. So that's all I have to say on breast cancer today. Go ahead and you can visit us on Facebook at Medical Stuff. We're on Instagram at Medical Stuff 52. Twitter is MedSide Stuff. Our email is MedSideStuff@yahoo.com. If you are using a podcatcher and you can't find us on there, I mean, obviously you found us this way, but if you want, you have your favorite podcatcher and you want us on there, let us know and we'll do our best to make it happen. And drop a review. Tell us what we're doing wrong. Tell us what we're doing right. Mostly what we're doing right. That's really what we want to hear. And toast? It seems empty without Mark. Yeah. Toast.